This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: more Palestinians are killed as Israel keeps pounding Gaza on the 132nd day of its onslaught on the besieged strip. International pressure is mounting on Israel to refrain from a planned ground invasion of the southern Gaza city of Rafah. And the UN says U.S. decision to relist Yemen's Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group could inflict serious harm on the country's devastated economy. Hello and welcome everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News.
The Israeli regime keeps pounding the besieged Gaza Strip with airstrikes and artillery fire more than 130 days into the genocidal campaign. At least five Palestinians were killed after Israeli warplanes targeted residential buildings in Al-Zaytun area in Gaza City. In the north of Gaza City, two women and one child were killed by an Israeli airstrike on a civilian car. Earlier on Wednesday, eight Palestinians were killed and nearly two dozen others injured in Israeli attacks on the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital and the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. The health ministry in Gaza says 130 Palestinians have been killed in the past day, pushing the overall death toll to almost 28,600. The Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip has led to mass displacement of Palestinians. They've been forced to take shelter in tents or severely damaged infrastructures without basic amenities. Let's take a listen to some of the Palestinians describing their dire conditions in the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza.
There's no food, water, or medicine. I have lost a finger and I have no medicine. We haven't eaten bread for over 3 months as we lack flour.
The children bring this flour from under the rubble so that we can sift it, as the livestock food that we used to eat is finished. They go to death and bring us this from the rubble of destroyed houses, and we sift it even though it is full of debris.
The situation here is bad. We have no food or water, and we don't even sleep well. We didn't have breakfast or lunch, and I'm trying to prepare food from cheese with mallow. Even 1 kilo costs 6 to 7 shekel. We can't even afford to buy 1 kilo of cheese with mallow.
We are displaced people and our children don't have food or clothes or blankets or electricity. Just nothing. A miserable life. We feel lifeless.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to go ahead with a planned ground assault on the southern Gaza city of Rafah, despite international criticism and concern. Netanyahu reiterated this pledge despite warnings from many countries, including the regime's close allies. In a joint statement, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand have also expressed grave concerns, saying that a ground offensive in Rafah would be catastrophic. Several Western countries, including France, Germany, and Britain, have already warned that the Israeli military incursion would lead to a humanitarian disaster of a new magnitude. The International Committee of the Red Cross has also in a statement said that the aggression against Rafah would pose a, quote, disastrous risk to civilian lives and infrastructure. According to the UN, Rafah is currently hosting about half of the Gaza population.
Rafah was once a safe haven for Palestinians fleeing northern Gaza Strip in the earliest stages of the Israeli onslaught. That's when the regime forced the Palestinians to evacuate their homes ahead of heavy bombardments. This is the status quo in Rafah now. The whole city has turned into a large, overcrowded refugee camp. Aerial images show how the population in Rafah more than quadrupled in a matter of a few months. Most residents are living in temporary structures such as tents, and aid organizations have warned of a dire humanitarian situation. Food and water are scarce, and the city's overburdened health infrastructure is on the brink. Life in Rafah has grown unbearable for people who have been traumatized by the loss of their loved ones, destruction of their homes, repeated displacements, and the uncertainty of their life in what has become the world's largest refugee camp. But could it get any worse?
This area was supposed to be a safe zone, but there is no safety across the entire Gaza Strip.
They said Rafah is safe, so we came here. What else could have brought us here? And now they are bombarding Rafah. Where could we possibly go?
Just in one instance, around 100 Palestinians were killed in Israeli airstrikes in Rafah on February 12th. The city is located in the southernmost part of the Gaza Strip. It's trapped between Egypt in the south, the Mediterranean Sea in the west, Israeli-occupied territories in the east, and Israeli troops in the north. Egypt has blocked the border crossing as it doesn't want refugees from Gaza. All this amid Israel's push for a ground invasion into Rafah under the pretext of arresting Hamas leaders. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ordered the Israeli army to evacuate civilians from the city. But where should the Palestinians who are struck between the devil and the deep blue sea go to?
You say they should get out of the way, but you have also admitted in this interview there is nowhere safe for them to go because there is nowhere where you can say there will not be airstrikes.
So, and the international community must insist that civilians can be vacated away from areas where Hamas is trying to use them as human shields.
Are you saying
areas
they should go
where
to
we
Egypt?
Have already destroyed?
Are you saying
areas
they should go
where
to
we
Egypt?
Have already destroyed?
As calls grow for Israel to hold back its planned assault on Rafah, criticism of Tel Aviv's staunchest supporter, the U.S. has been mounting. International human rights organizations have warned that any further escalation in Rafah would have unfathomable ramifications. So far, there has been no signal of an end to the onslaught. The latest round of truce talks underway in Egypt have also been inconclusive.
The United Nations has warned that an Israeli ground invasion of Rafah, which it says is crammed with almost half of the Gaza population, could lead to slaughter, as millions have taken shelter there. Yet, news headlines indicate that there is no silver lining for Palestinians, especially for those in Rafah. The latest round of truce talks among the United States, Egypt, Israel, and Qatar in Cairo have not borne fruit yet. The looming threat of Israel's ground invasion of Rafah has even sparked criticism from Tel Aviv's European allies.
And it really, we think, is impossible to see how you can fight a war amongst these people. There's nowhere for them to go. They can't go south into Egypt. They can't go north and back to their homes because many have been destroyed. So we are very concerned about the situation and we want Israel to stop and think very seriously before it takes any further action.
However, the European allies of Israel have not stopped there and even blamed the main supporter of Tel Aviv for the unfolding crisis in Gaza.
How many times have you heard the most prominent leaders and foreign ministers around the world saying too many people are being killed? President Biden said this is too much on the top. It's not proportional. Well, if you believe that too many people are being killed, maybe you should provide less arms.
This is not the first time Washington has been censured for its involvement in the killing of innocent Palestinians. The U.S. is a key military backer of Israel and has repeatedly vetoed Security Council resolutions calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. On Tuesday, Senate passed another foreign aid package that includes $14.1 billion for Israel's genocidal onslaught on the Gaza Strip. This comment by President Joe Biden during a joint press conference at the White House with Jordan's King Abdullah has sparked new controversies regarding the U.S. complicity in the Gaza onslaught.
The King and I also discussed the situation in Rafah. As I said yesterday, our military operation in Rafah, they're the major military operation in Rafah.
While this was later described as a slip of tongue, recent protests in front of the White House clearly show if this is an Israeli onslaught or a U.S.-Israeli onslaught in Gaza.
War criminals, this Biden genocidal administration will not have a second of peace.
Over the past 4 months, relentless Israeli airstrikes and shelling have not only claimed innocent lives, but destroyed Gaza's vital infrastructure, including the electricity grid. Many Palestinians have come up with novel ideas to make up for power shortages. Some Gazans in the southern city of Rafah explain their experiments to cope with the crisis.
We have been staying at home for months because of the total blockade of Gaza and the outbreak of war. No jobs, thus no income, no public electricity, and the generators are running out of fuel. So many people here have invented other methods. Some even turn electricity supply into a business. They have to do that because the family needs income. There are also people who use handheld iron cranks to generate electricity or ride bicycles to drive generators.
For the first 20 days living in this tent, we had no electricity and therefore no lights. During the period, I had been thinking over the way to get electricity. So I went to the scrapyard and took home some fans. I assembled them, connected them to the wires, and put the batteries and lights on the ends. It can be seen as one of my own inventions. Fortunately, my experiment succeeded. At least now people don't need to live in the dark in the tent. I hope to expand the application of this invention so it could generate more electricity and hopefully light up the whole refugee camp.
We set up a charging station mainly for the people who live in tents because they have no place to get power. Dozens of devices can be charged at the same time here, most of which are mobile phones, batteries and radios, so that people can at least hear news and know what is going on. There has been a power outage for more than 100 days since the war began. We have been longing for power, but so far we have not seen it.
The United Nations has voiced concern over a U.S. decision to relist Yemen's Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group. The world body says a measure could inflict serious harm on the war-torn country's devastated economy. Addressing a Security Council meeting, the UN Aid Operations Director, Edem Wasornu, said Washington's decision would have a huge impact on imports of essential goods that Yemenis now rely on more than ever. He stressed that humanitarian aid cannot make up for a shortage of goods and supplies that would ensue U.S. decision. Wasornu said transport costs to Hodeida and aid imports have significantly increased due to the ongoing tensions in the Red Sea, and Yemen's economy cannot handle further shocks. The U.S. announced its decision in January, saying that it would take effect in 30 days, which falls on February the 17th. It added that the designation could be reversed only if Yemen ceases attacks on Israel-linked ships in the Red Sea in support of the Palestinian people in Gaza. Now, these 10 civilians, including children, have been killed in Israeli airstrikes on a village in the Nabatea region of southern Lebanon. Lebanese media reports say Israeli warplanes hit a residential building in the early hours of Thursday. That was the second attack by the regime on residential areas in southern Lebanon in the past 24 hours. The Israeli military has intensified its deadly attacks on southern Lebanon. That's amid strong responses from Hezbollah fighters who have targeted Israeli surveillance towers and bases as well as command centers, inflicting heavy losses on the regime in recent weeks. Our Beirut correspondent, Mayam Saleh, earlier gave us more details on the recent escalation.
Well, the latest that we have, very significant development, is the shelling that took place in the town of Nabatea. And here we're talking about the city of Nabatea, actually, which is one of the main cities in South Lebanon. And it is considered relatively further away from the border. We're talking about at least 20 kilometers away from the border. And it's not only a place which is still very densely populated, it's also a place where many of those people who left the bordering towns took residence in those areas, whether with relatives or some of them already have their own residence in that area as well. And so this is a very dangerous, if we may call it, development from the Israeli side. The Israelis have decided to respond to Hezbollah's operations in a manner where they target civilians, and that is usually what the Israelis do. This is the history of the Israeli aggressions against Lebanon, after any Israeli operation, this is what usually happens. Now here we have something different, which is we had throughout the confrontations. Actually, Hezbollah had always attempted and done their best to basically try to keep the civilian population as safe as possible, and this is why Hezbollah has targeted only military sites. And so this is considered a very, very dangerous development. We want to wait and see how Hezbollah will respond. Hezbollah has said that they will definitely not allow this to pass without any retaliation. But how that retaliation will be, so far Hezbollah has retaliated by only targeting military sites. But that is the question now. Will Hezbollah go further in targeting even the settlements, whether in the north and other areas, and will that lead to more evacuation of the settlers? So this is why we need to keep updated to see what happens next. Hezbollah will be speaking. Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah will be speaking tomorrow. We'll definitely have some insight in that speech.
A British pressure group known as Republic says King Charles's cancer diagnosis will not stop anti-royalists from campaigning against the monarchical system in the country. That of the group says the excessive media coverage of King's cancer battle will rather buttress the arguments for the abolition of the monarchy. He said that the news pushes the monarchy into the foreground, and that fewer Britons like what they see. The group, which has been advocating the replacement of the monarchy with a parliamentary republic, says its revenue has grown extensively since passing of Queen Elizabeth. According to numerous polls, the popularity of British royals had oscillated over recent decades. Last month, YouGov polls showed an uptick in Republican sentiment in the UK. Young Brits are said to have become largely disengaged with the monarchy. Shooting incident during a rally marking Super Bowl victory in the U.S. city of Kansas, Missouri, leaves at least one person dead and more than 20 others injured.
KCFD units, along with our mutual aid partners that were working to assist us at this event, touched a total of 22 gunshot victims. One of those was a fatality. We had 8 what we considered immediately life-threatening patients. We had 7 with life-threatening injuries, and we had 6 that had minor injuries. Of the most serious, the immediately life-threatening injuries, we had 8 of those. Those were all transported and off the scene and routed to hospitals within 10 minutes.
The gunfire erupted in downtown, where the National Football League players were celebrating their victory. According to the Kansas City Police Chief, 3 people were detained in connection with the shooting. Stacey Graves also reported the recovery of firearms, but did not specify. The police are still working to identify the deceased victim. Motives behind the gun violence remain unknown. The NFL, in a statement, said all its players, coaches, and staff who attended the victory rally were safe. The shooting occurred despite the presence of some 800 law enforcement officers, including FBI agents, at the rally. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
leaders meeting with senior commanders and personnel of the Air Force and Army's Air Defense Force. On Monday, 5th of February 2024, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a large number of commanders and personnel of the Iranian Air Force. The meeting took place in Tehran at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya. In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of views expressed at this meeting. Stay with us. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a large number of commanders and personnel of the Iranian Air Force on Monday, 5th of February. This meeting takes place every year on or near 8th of February. On this day, in 1979, a group of Iranian Air Force officers pledged their allegiance to the founder of the Islamic Republic, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, and joined the Islamic Revolution. Commemorating this amazing event, which gave further impetus to the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei referred to the events of 9th and 10th of February 1979, when the Shah's Imperial Guard attacked the training center of the Air Force and encountered some resistance from Air Force personnel. And more importantly, the weapons storage facilities were opened up and weapons were distributed among the public, and young revolutionaries became armed for the first time. The following day, on 11th of February 1979, the Shah's regime collapsed and the young revolutionaries, aided by the brave officers and personnel of the Iranian Air Force, succeeded in bringing down the Pahlavi regime. According to the leader, Air Force personnel injected hope and courage into the general public and dashed the hopes of the anti-revolutionaries when they ditched the Pahlavi regime in favour of the Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Khamenei added, the Air Force took the lead in joining the revolution. Of course, the army, which was an upright, popular, Muslim and faithful body, easily joined the revolution, but the Air Force was in the vanguard. They initially brought about the extraordinary incident by pledging their allegiance to the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, on 8th of February 1979. It is also important to note that after this initial step, about 5 or 6 months later, the self-sufficiency jihad was established. The first branch of the armed forces in which the self-sufficiency jihad organization was formed was the Air Force. This is the same spirit of taking action, that is, the same spirit that leads an active member of the Shah's army towards freeing themselves and joining the Islamic Revolution. The state of courage, spirituality, and spiritual ability and spiritual strength, the same spirit later extends into the field of construction, resulting in the formation of the self-sufficiency jihad. The first place in which the self-sufficiency jihad was established was in the Air Force, and this was a momentous event. It was a great step for the Air Force to think about making their own equipment, manufacturing their own parts, repairing damaged parts, unraveling the secrets behind the complex American technology, which they were not previously allowed to do, and in short, taking action. That was a huge step to take. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei added, before this major step, the Shah's Air Force belonged entirely to the Americans. The fighter aircraft and other military equipment in the Air Force belonged to the Americans. It was a property of the United States, even though Iran had purchased the equipment and paid for it. Well, the faithful elements of the Air Force changed it from being American to being Iranian. The Air Force was Iranianized. It became Iranian. Its commanders became Iranian. Its personnel became Iranian. Its decision-makers became Iranian. And its equipment became Iranian. Although the equipment was made in America, but it belonged to the Iranian people. They did not dare touch it anymore. The Air Force was the catalyst of the Islamic Revolution. The Air Force, in a unique circumstance, became the catalyst of the Islamic Revolution's victory, and the catalyst for breaking the reliance of the Air Force and the Army on others. In further remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "Major, purposeful movements often slow down and suffer from a slump as they evolve. Even though they do not stop, they experience a state of sluggishness and lethargy. That is the nature of major movements. When you look at the numerous revolutions that have taken place across the world, you will see that a revolution that initially takes place with the intention of bringing about a fundamental transformation. However, after a few years, the same circumstances that existed before the revolution resurface once again. This is how it is. In other words, social movements often slow down, they often stop altogether or regress. If a revolutionary movement is to continue on its path, it requires a catalyst." Commenting further, the leader said, "Of course, there is a fundamental difference in the Islamic Revolution that differentiates it from other revolutions. The Islamic Revolution has some things within itself that are appealing to the masses and attracts followers. Even if some individuals decide to abandon the Islamic Revolution, many more individuals join the revolution and thus compensate for those who have parted ways. In the Islamic Republic, we are actively battling against oppression. There is the fight against oppression and standing against the coercion of the world-class bullies. We have the Jamkaran Mosque, the Ihya or Vigil Nights, the Arba'in Walk, and the I'tikaf during the month of Rajab. Note the extensive range of activities. There is both a battle against oppression and a battle against the carnal self. There is a focus on the future of the country as well as attention towards God, spirituality, and God's remembrance, or zikr, paradise, etc. This itself attracts followers to compensate for those who have parted ways." Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "Therefore, a catalyst is needed. But what is the purpose of this catalyst? It is to prevent the slowing down of actions, to counteract fear, to avoid experiencing incompetence and inferiority in the operational group when a great task is about to be undertaken. This is where the role of the catalyst comes into play. So who is the catalyst and what do they do? We refer to these catalysts as the elite within society. But who are the elite? Are they well-known individuals, educated people or scientists, for example? No, the elite refers to a group of people who make decisions based on their own thinking and knowledge, rather than blindly following others. These people are regarded as the elite. These elites can be among various revolutionaries, business people, workers, military personnel, clerics, and various other groups. They can be among those who work in the media, students or politicians." Ayatollah Khamenei added, Fortunately, in our country, the elite are not in a minority. Those who think, make decisions, and take appropriate action based on a plan are many, and this is a blessing of the Islamic Revolution. This is not the case in many countries around the world. Now, I have not been there myself, but there are reports from some big and famous countries in the world that the general public are not aware of what is going on in the world around them. What they're concerned about is simply to earn a bit of money or add a bit to their wealth. This is not the case in our country. In our country, people who act with foresight, discernment, understand what they're doing, recognize the fronts, recognize the enemy, know their methods, and recognize who their friends are not few in number. They are numerous. These people can play an active role. They can undertake tasks for the country in critical cases. They have a heavy responsibility. What I would like to tell you is that those who have ideas, their views are thoughtful and discerning. They understand and recognize different situations. They know what is going on and refrain from blindly following others. They have heavy responsibilities. They need to maintain the general direction of the movement of society and not allow this movement to deviate. If elite members of society neglect their duty, the repercussions that follow will strike historic blows to the nation. We have experienced many incidents like this in the past, in the history of Islam. During the era of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, peace be upon them, there were people among the elite who correctly understood and identified the issues, but were not present when their involvement was needed. These individuals were doubtful, indecisive, lazy, and sometimes even treacherous. Their negative impact spread to others, including those who blindly followed the majority. Commenting more on the elite, the leader said, "The enemy front has devised a special plan targeting the elite. They have plans for the elite in our country and in many other countries in the world. They seek to create doubts, hesitation, and indecisiveness in the elite. They seek to lure them with worldly pleasures to attract them so that they do not take decisive action at critical moments. This is something which is expected of the elite. The duty of the elite is to counteract the enemy's attempts to sow doubt and to clarify matters when necessary. The jihad of clarification is based on this." Commenting on the situation in the Gaza Strip, the leader said, "If I were to give an example regarding the elite in our present time, I believe it would be the situation in the Gaza Strip. The elite in the Islamic world have certain duties. The elite are scholars, scientists, politicians, and journalists. They see what is happening in the Gaza Strip. They realize how the United States, with the support of the Zionist regime, is hurting humanity. They're aware of this. They should talk to their own people and explain the situation in order to persuade them. The elite need to create a public demand amongst the people so that their governments will have no choice but to strike at the Zionist regime. Certainly, the elite can cut off economic relations with the Israeli regime. This is something that they should really ought to consider. If people around the world demand this from their governments and put pressure on them, this will happen, and it will be effective. Nations can compel their governments to withdraw their backing from the cruel Zionist regime, which is killing women and children and the elderly in Gaza." In concluding remarks, the leader said, "May the Lord suppress this nation's enemies, and may the Iranian nation emerge victorious. God's greetings, mercy, and blessings upon all of you."
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Tragedy after tragedy, war crime after war crime, and the genocide continues. This is the description of what has been happening in Gaza since October the 7th. The Israeli regime continues trying to raise the bar on just how much it can torture Palestinians. The majority of the population of Gaza has been displaced, some of them many times as they were told to leave the north and head towards the middle and then to the south. And now as people have gone as far south as they can go, which is Rafah, the sadistic Israeli regime is threatening a ground invasion where almost 1.5 million people are located, and most of them in tents or in other temporary locations. We're going to take a look at the latest of this genocide in Gaza on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Bachaimer Abu Saada, professor of political science, Al-Azhar University, Doha. And Paul Rudy, co-founder of Free Palestine Movement out of Berkeley. Thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start this off in Doha. Well, Muhammad, your thoughts on what the Israeli regime is trying to do, trying to accomplish at this point in time, in your perspective.
Well, many thanks, Marzia, for hosting me in your program. To be honest with you, as a Palestinian and also as a Palestinian who lived the Israeli war against Gaza at the beginning of it, it seems to me that Israel has gone crazy. The Israeli leadership, the Israeli army, the Israeli regime as a whole, they've lost their mind. What they are doing against the Palestinian people is beyond imagination. The magnitude of killing, the destruction, going after Palestinian children, women, civilians, destroying hospitals, clinics, and schools and universities, nothing has very much escaped the Israeli killing and the Israeli destruction. And now they are preparing the ground to go into Rafah, where they very much have pushed 1.4 million Palestinians from the north of Gaza and also the central refugee camps of the Gaza Strip into the south city of Rafah. And as we have heard yesterday, that Netanyahu gave the orders to the Israeli army to prepare for the ground invasion of Rafah, where, as I mentioned, there is 1.4 million Palestinians in tents. Mostly of them are living in tents with little food, with little potable water, and that's going to be the mother of all tragedies. That's going to be the mother of all Palestinian Nakbas if the Israeli army goes into Rafah with this large population in a very small piece of territory, which is 62 square kilometers. That is the territory of Rafah, and usually Rafah is a house of is housing roughly 350,000 Palestinians.
Right.
But
right.
Now there is 1.4 million Palestinians there. It seems to me that Israel is trying to make one thing, punish the Palestinians collectively. That's what Israel has been doing for the past 4 months, going after the they're going after Hamas, but they are not going only after Hamas. They're going after the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. That
okay.
is collective punishment.
Stay with me, Mohammed.
That is genocide against the Palestinian people.
Stay with me. Let me get Paul in on this conversation, this discussion. Now, none of the goals that the regime announced in the beginning for going into Gaza has been met, Paul. Zionist forces have not destroyed Hamas, nor have they been able to free any of the captives. But, of course, they have been successful in killing many kids, infants, women, and in general civilians. And they have destroyed much of the infrastructure. Your take, were these the actual goals to begin with?
I think that's the main goal. I think they intended to use the Hamas action to liberate Palestine. I think they'd intended to use that as a pretext for another Nakba, another genocide. Their objective is less about getting rid of Hamas because they know they can't. And because they know that if you get rid of Hamas, which is impossible, you simply have another resistance movement replacing it. I mean, the Palestinians, no people is ever going to give up their liberty and and accept the kind of prisoner relationship with Israel that Israel was demanding. And in fact, Israel doesn't care about a prisoner relationship. From the beginning, since 1897, you could even say 1895, the objective of Israel has been to eliminate the Palestinians. And so they're using this as a way to achieve that. I think their objective is not to punish Palestinians, it is to eliminate Palestinians. That is the entire, the beginning and the end of their objective in Gaza and the rest of Palestine.
Hmm. Well, Muhammad, Palestinians not only have to deal with the bombings and targeted sniper killings and relocation and starvation, but there's also another aspect, which is the psychological torture. The regime is constantly flying drones overhead with a constant humming sound to let everyone know that they are there and can be killed at any moment. I want to talk about that side of things. And in your perspective, why is this regime so inhumane?
Well, Marzia, I have a mother who is in Rafah. I have brothers and sisters and nephews and nieces and many relatives who are in Rafah, and I talk to them every now and then to try to make sure that they are okay and they are fine. It's not only the bombing and the pounding of the Gaza Strip. In addition to that, the starvation. Israel is not is allowing only a very limited amount of food and water for the Palestinians. Lack of medical supplies. It's the cold weather that also is killing and making Palestinian children sick as a result of the very cold weather that the Palestinian people are facing in Rafah with no homes, living in tents. And it seems to me that it's all of that. In addition to all of that, yes, the Palestinian people cannot escape Israeli snipers. Not only in Rafah, but all over the Gaza Strip. There are Israeli snipers in the north, in Gaza City, in Khan Yunis, where very much they shoot at anything that moves. We have seen over the past few days that Israeli army, snipers of the Israeli army killed Palestinians in Gaza City around the Shifa Hospital. They killed Palestinians in Khan Yunis around the Al-Amal Hospital, which is in Khan Yunis, and Nasser Hospital, where there are hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinians displaced, went to these hospitals seeking protection, seeking safe places. But there is no safe place, unfortunately, in Gaza. So it's just it's a atrocity after atrocity, and the number is rising. We're talking about now almost more than 100,000 Palestinians are either dead, missing, or wounded as a result of this Israeli massacre against the Palestinians. We're talking roughly about 4% of the Palestinians in Gaza are affected, as I mentioned, dead, injured, or missing as a result of what's going on. Right. And unfortunately, all of this is happening under the watch of the international community.
Yes, I want to get, stay with me. I want to actually,
it doesn't
stay with me, Muhammad, because I want to touch on that aspect of it a little bit. Well, Paul, as you heard about the ground invasion that Netanyahu is calling for in Rafah, and as Mohammed had said. If you're talking about a population that before was about 280,000, now 1.4 million as Netanyahu is telling them to leave. I mean, where are these people supposed to go? What are they supposed to do?
As far as Israel is concerned, they don't have to go anywhere. They can be killed right where they are. They can be exterminated. And in fact, I think the count that we are hearing from the Ministry of Health in Gaza is a gross underestimate of the dead and wounded. Right now, Palestinians are dying without being counted. They are starving to death. They are dying of disease because of the cold and because of the bad water and because of the lack of sewage services and the filth and they're dying from exposure because they don't even have, we call them tents, but they're not really tents. They're just scraps of material that have been used to create tents. And they're dying from all of these things. And the Ministry of Health is not really counting them, nor can they count them. After all, if a family member is extremely ill and dying, are Palestinians going to take them to a hospital that doesn't exist, that is doesn't have services to offer them? No, they die anonymously in the middle of nowhere, and they get buried on the side of the road, wherever family members and volunteers from the community can bury them. There are mass graves all over Gaza now. In all sorts of places. I think the statistics are gross underestimates and that this problem will increase a lot. The only way we'll know how many people in Gaza have died and from various Israeli inducements to death through cutting off resources and letting them die of starvation and disease is by waiting until the end of this and then counting the population afterwards and comparing it to what it was before October 7th. That's the only way we'll ever find out. And I think the result is going to be terrifying. It'll be horrible. Right.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Mohammed, with Netanyahu openly announcing his intention for the regime to invade Rafah, you mentioned the international community. Let's talk about that side of the things. He has said his intention. We know that 1.4 million people are basically trapped in this area without any protection. And yet, basically, the regime has been given the green light by the U.S. and its accomplices, along with the U.N., to kill, to torture, to maim. Until basically it seems that there is no Palestinian left. Your take on this so-called international community at this point in time?
Well, first of all, Marzia, let me say that maybe what Netanyahu is trying to do now by preparing the ground to invade Rafah is trying to put pressure on the Palestinian resistance to give up on its conditions with regard to the so-called prisoner exchange deal with Israel, and with regard to the conditions that put forward by Hamas. But if that military pressure doesn't work, then at the end of the day, there is nothing going to prevent Netanyahu from invading Rafah, because he has already invaded, let's say, more than 80% of of the Gaza Strip, the north, the central area of Gaza. Khan Yunis is now under heavy Israeli pounding and bombardment. Now, going back to your question, it's just so sad that all of this is happening under the watch of the international community. And the only thing that we hear from the UN, from Israel, from the EU, that they are worried about Israeli plans to invade Rafah. They are worried about the number of Palestinians who are being killed. That's what we hear. Unfortunately, this is not enough. We've seen how the UN, how the US and EU have dealt with other countries who invaded their neighbors. Mainly, I'm talking about Russia. Nothing is compared when it comes to what Israel is doing against the Palestinians. And by the way, the number of Palestinians who have been killed, especially Palestinian children, is like way many times than the number of Ukrainian children who have been killed in 2 years, for example. But the international community, meaning the U.S., EU, and many countries have boycotted Russia and put like a number of economic and financial sanctions, but none of that has happened. And just to say that the international community is worried, that's not enough. That's not helping the Palestinians. That isn't protecting the Palestinians from the genocide that is taking place in the Gaza Strip. And I wish really we really see serious steps taken to prevent Israel, to put enough pressure on Israel to stop the genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Well, Paul, whole families have been wiped out. Infants haven't been spared. And the injured in hospitals have received no mercy, nor have the doctors from the Israeli forces, which have targeted all, young and old. I mean, what does it take to call what we're seeing a genocide by the so-called international community? I mean, what does it take to call out all of these war crimes by that same so-called international community?
There's an American writer by the name of Upton Sinclair who was a fighter for the poor and disenfranchised at the opening of the 20th century. And he said, it's nearly impossible to make a man understand something that he's paid not to understand. And that's the case with the international community today. The international community is being paid by the United States, in effect, not to understand what is happening there, not to pronounce the word genocide, not to condemn Israel. It's all a matter of coercion by a very racist and aggressive international policy from the United States leading the West. This is what's happening here. I don't think that Hamas is going to change anything because of the genocide that Israel is perpetrating on the Palestinians, because they know that the Israel's intention, whether they compromise or don't compromise, is still going to be genocide. And so what's the good reason for doing that? Furthermore, the genocide that Israel is practicing is driving Palestinian young men to be fighters with Hamas. Hamas is getting stronger as time goes on, and Israel is really a basket case. They're economically, they're falling apart, and they're losing soldiers that is very difficult for Israel, they can't stand to lose soldiers. They can't have captives in the hands of Hamas and the Palestinian resistance. So and 500,000 Israelis have already left the country, and we know that they're living with 300,000 refugees from the north of occupied Palestine to the south. So businesses are failing despite the money that the United States is pouring into Israel. I think if I had to put my money on an outcome of what's happening there, I'd put it on Hamas and the resistance. I think they are winning this.
Right. Well, Muhammad, interesting what Paul said. He puts it on the resistance because, I mean, basically we see what is happening to the Israeli regime, that it is coming apart at the seam. But at the same time, it continues to create so many different tragedies inside of the Gaza Strip. We saw the body of 6-year-old Hind, the little girl who was missing for 2 weeks after calling the emergency number to report her father being targeted in their car, and it was found the emergency unit which was looking for her was also targeted, and the vehicle they found was just mangled iron steel with no one surviving. I mean, there's so many stories, so many tragedies that just one of them would be enough, usually, for a so-called civilized international community to call this regime out. What else has to happen to stop this sadistic regime and call it out for the Holocaust that it is committing?
You know, it's good that you brought up the issue of Hind and her family. And you know what? The sad thing is that the Palestinian Red Crescent, who went to save Hind, they went with coordination. There was supposed to be a coordination between the Red Cross, who coordinated for the Palestinian Red Cross with the Israeli army to go and save Hind. And unfortunately, Hind was missing for many days, and the Palestinian Red Crescent who went to save her were also missing. And we just knew about it today that Hind is dead with all of her family members. And the Palestinian Red Crescent workers who went to save her are also dead. It seems to me that Israel has crossed all lines. Nothing is stopping Israel from committing such crimes, which again are happening under the watch of the international community. And I guess even the measures which the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, has asked Israel to do about 2 weeks ago, Israel has not implemented those measures. Israel is, I don't even know whether Israel is going to report to ICJ a month after these measures were supposed to be in place. It seems to me with the impunity that has been provided to Israel by very much the U.S. and many Western countries, Israel believe that it has the right to do whatever it wants against the Palestinian people, and it feels that it can escape punishment. It feels that it has the impunity to do what it wants under the pretext that the 7th of October supposedly was carried out and inside Israeli territory, and that killed 1,200 Israelis and took 240 Israeli hostages. And the Israeli reaction, which even President Biden, the U.S. president, said yesterday that the Israeli retaliation against the Palestinian has even gone more than anyone has ever imagined. So even the U.S. started to speak out against this Israeli disproportionate use of force, which
okay.
is, in
well,
my
let me
opinion,
get Paul
it's a genocide.
In here. So sorry, I'm just about out of time, Mohammed. Paul, do you think that we're witnessing the collapse of the whole liberal system as their hypocrisy has been exposed to the whole world and they're refusing to stop this genocide? How do you see it?
I think this is correct, and it's not due just to the genocide in Gaza, but also they're losing on every front you can imagine. Ukraine in Europe is another front on which the so-called liberal democracies of the West are floundering. The world is changing, and unfortunately, it's very painful to watch it changing. It's not changing in a cooperative way, we could say. The old order is of colonialism and Western domination and a bipolar or unipolar world is dying, and that death will first be projected onto other peoples like the Palestinians and the Ukrainians and others. This is very sad to see, but unfortunately,